This message is brought to you by DoNotAge.org, the longevity research organisation that's on a mission to extend health span for as many people as possible via products that actually work. Start your journey today at DoNotAge.org and use code LAMA for a 10% discount. That's LLAMA.
We should be thinking about our children and our parents and the intergenerational dynamics that we have, because we do improve our health in community and in family relationships. And so that is one of our best opportunities to influence future generations.
Hello again and welcome to LAMA. This is Peter Bowes, and LAMA is Live Long and Master Aging. We explore the science and stories behind human longevity. This episode is brought to you by Ager, a new financial product that provides guaranteed supplemental income for people who worry about the financial impact of longevity. To find out more, visit age-up.com. That's age-up.com. Now, a simple question. When you reach the great age of 75, 80, 85, do you think you'll be fit or frail? Well, the sad reality is that from our early 20s, our muscle strength is deteriorating or potentially deteriorating depending on how we live our lives. And that loss of muscle mass is what leads to frailty in old age. But it's not inevitable. My guest today is Kathy Richards, an exercise physiologist and founder of Inspiring Vitality, where she offers online fitness coaching focusing on the needs of people over 40. Kathy is also a prolific writer and public speaker. Her most recent book is Boom, Six Steps to a Longer, Healthier Life. Kathy, welcome to the Live Long and Master Aging podcast.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Great to talk to you. You do online classes. Is that something that's developed because of COVID, or were you doing it before?
You know, I was doing it a little bit before, so I was actually ready when COVID hit, and that part of my business has really exploded.
How do you find that people have responded or adapted to that situation? I know I've gone through it myself in terms of going to a physical gym as opposed to building up my own home gym and doing some online work as well. It's been, I know for a lot of people, it's quite a difficult transition.
You know, I didn't find it difficult at all because I was already working with some clients who weren't geographically in my same area that way. So I was used to it. And then for the clients that I was used to seeing in person, they were really eager to do it because we're all hungry for the human connection. We're all hungry to keep as much normal as we possibly can. And so for us to be able to see each other over the computer screen, it was as good as we could get. And we were all happy to do it, my clients and myself. I would have missed them and they would have missed me. And so it's really been a blessing to be able to continue working together.
Yeah. And I think it's probably going to change. Hopefully in the not too distant future, COVID is going to go away and we'll get back to some semblance of normality. But I don't think we'll necessarily go back to where we were. I think it's going to be a mixture, isn't there, of online working, of home working out, perhaps more than we did before.
I agree. And, you know, I have been a fan of exercising at home myself for my own needs for a long time, just because that's what worked best with my kids. And now I have my dog that's getting old and sick and I don't want to leave him. And you know, so it's all these things that if you don't have travel time and you can be home and still have the connection that you want and need. I mean, we don't want our worlds to be 100% virtual once COVID is over, but it's nice to have more of the tools and more of the comfort level that we have with it now so that we can continue with that more even after COVID when we need to.
So we're going to talk about, I mentioned the issue of frailty, which we've touched on before in the podcast, but it is crucially important to acknowledge the importance of muscle strength as we get older. Before we dig into that, let's just talk a little bit about you and your career to date and what's brought you to this point in your career.
Well, I'm so glad that you asked, because it is my career path that brought me to focusing on the changes that happen to us as we age, because I started my career in corporate wellness at Marriott. I was the director of wellness at Marriott headquarters for a number of years when I was young, in my 20s and early 30s. And I was around all these busy corporate people, and I was forced to figure out ways to connect with them and how they could fit in fitness and wellness in their busy lives, their stressed lives. And I started developing motivational presentations because it was my job to bring in speakers. And I found that the speakers had knowledge, but they were boring. they were really boring. And I was finding that the the audiences weren't responding to the information. What they really needed was the motivation, and they needed the practical tips and why it matters and how someone who doesn't really care about fitness could fit something in. People would meet with me. I had this one employee there, and I'll never forget this meeting where she sat down with me and she said, "Look, I'm embarrassed to say this to you because your whole life revolves around wellness. Like, that's what you do for a living, but I only want to do the bare minimum. You know, what can you tell me that I can do that's the bare minimum?" And that really, I started a whole seminar series on the bare minimum. And I said, "Don't be embarrassed. That's a fantastic goal." And then to continue the story, later in my career, I left corporate world and was home with my kids for when they were young and focused on busy moms and doing boot camps for busy moms. But I went back to full time and was a director of wellness for a retirement community where the average age was 85. So that's when my eyes got open to what's possible in the best case scenario for 85 and what is also quite common in the worst case scenario for the age of 85. And I started asking myself when I was looking at the huge variance, like I'm daily for 8 years, I was surrounded by 1,400 people with the average age of 85. So you notice some things, you know, you notice some variations.
I was just going to say, you must have noticed a lot, because I certainly doing this podcast and interviewing some very, very old people. You, after a while, you notice some common connections, some common traits, whether they're personality traits, whether they're lifetime exercise traits. And you can almost begin to join the dots through the experience of these very old people.
You can, and you start seeing the commonalities for people who are having the more successful and higher quality of life and those that aren't. And it wasn't that when you're 85, suddenly you had a birthday and you're frail. It's that these habits, all your habits and all those decades leading up to the age of 85 that make the most difference. And so since I continued working with younger audiences also and doing seminars for corporate wellness groups, I started having this message to the people in their 40s and 50s and 60s saying, what type of 85-year-old do you want to be? Because you're working on it right now.
You also, I understand, testified at a White House commission on health issues. How did that happen? And what exactly was your message?
Well, you know, that was a number of years ago while I was working at Marriott, and I was part of the wellness program there. And the specific event was about complementary and alternative medicine, that there was a special task force that wanted to report on the effectiveness of different strategies in overall health. And so I was there representing workplace wellness. And can workplace wellness make an impact on our overall health and well-being? And of course, my response was that yes, we had done I won't call them research studies, but our data from doing our health risk appraisals at that time, pre and post, with including follow-up for people who are high risk, we had shown some significant improvements in health at that time. And so it really was a testament to that people are in the workplace spending a huge percentage of time there. It's a captive audience, and we really are, it behooves us not to ignore that opportunity to influence people's opportunities so we can facilitate their habits if they choose to.
Yeah, and it's sad to say, and obviously we've gone through a very unusual 12 months or so, and so the situation is skewed anyway, but generally it's still a little frightening to me how little attention is paid to workplace wellness, and whether it's in terms of just the amount of time that's given to people to nurture that side of their lives, or whether it's physical facilities that can help people just to get in a little bit of exercise during their working day. I think we still have a long way to go, don't we, in terms of corporate culture.
Oh, I agree. And for you to mention the word corporate culture, that phrase, it does vary from place to place. And that's what I have seen for sure, is that the leadership at any organization has so much opportunity to set a tone. And it's not even just the organization as a whole. We find that an organization might say they have a great wellness culture, but then it does boil down to the specific department, the specific boss, for the workplace, little cubby holes, little pockets of people.
Just reminds me of an episode we did a little while ago with my good friend Ross McCrae from Video Amp, which is a company here in the Los Angeles area, which has an extraordinarily good workplace culture as it applies to health and fitness. So if you're listening to this and it's piqued your interest, maybe go back in the index of episodes and listen to that one, because Ross has some really good ideas. Kathy, let's talk about frailty and that issue that I highlighted at the beginning. First of all, describe what is frailty and how does it develop as we get older?
Well, frailty typically has the most to do with our muscles and bones and how strong they are and how susceptible they are to injury over time. And are you able to go through the movements of daily life with comfort and with ease and without pain, and being able to continue to do the activities of daily living on your own, again, without pain. And so what we find is that as we age, one of the most significant factors is the loss of muscle mass, a loss of muscle strength. And that between the ages of 20 and 80, the average person loses 50% of their leg strength over that 60-year span, which is a ghastly percentage to think about. And most of us don't realize that because it's happening so slowly and gradually. And as long as we have enough strength to go through regular daily life, we might not realize that when we need a little more, it's not there until it gets to the point where we can't get out of a chair without using our hands to push off, which is the hallmark example.
And it is sometimes the issue, the physical deterioration that is the, and I don't want to be too harsh about this or sound too harsh, but it can be the beginning of the end for a lot of people. A serious fall at the age of 75 or 80 for an otherwise healthy person can suddenly bring on all of these other maybe seemingly unrelated health issues that accelerates their decline to a point where, you know, life really isn't terribly good. It involves sitting in a chair, watching television, lying on a couch, and they weren't what they were just a few short years ago.
Yes. Oh, and it can be so sad and disheartening. And when you are correct in that, for so many people, it is a snowball effect. So if you're going into your older years having leg strength, for example, as strong as possible, then number one, you're going to reduce your chance of falling. And number two, if you do fall, then you are going to recover more easily and more quickly. You're already going to have more leg strength, so that during the period of time where you might be laid up, you're starting with a higher level of muscle mass. So then again, you can buffer a little bit of the effects of that. So you're right, because when you fall and then aren't able to move after that, and then, you know, all these other things just start cascading around it. So the stronger you can keep your muscles, the better.
We've done quite a few episodes recently about nutritional supplementation that can help in terms of mitochondrial health, and the knock-on effect to that is better muscle strength. But it isn't the only way to help ourselves, is it? And this is where you come in terms of focusing on that issue quite early in life. And I noticed that you focus on people from the age of 40, but we mentioned this really from the age of 20, where our muscle strength deteriorates. So what can we do throughout a lifetime to improve our muscle strength and perhaps delay or even eliminate that situation where we become very frail?
The most important thing is really to implement weight training into your exercise routine. And that has been shown as the really number one strategy to maintain your muscle strength. And there have been research studies where they take a cross-section of the muscles of a 70-year-old like triathlete or an athlete in their 70s, and compare them microscopically to the muscle cells of a 20-something who's active, and they're identical. The muscles are able to respond and grow and stay strong over time with the stimulus. So that's what's fantastic. And, you know, as an exercise physiologist, when I study these things, I'm just so in awe. This is why I study this, that biologically, the muscle cells can respond up into very advanced ages. It never loses the ability to respond. So we can take someone who already is quite frail, someone who's in a skilled nursing setting, and start them on a strength training routine, and they will get stronger. I have seen people who had to use a walker who get their legs strong enough that they don't need the walker anymore, or someone who uses a cane and gets strong enough that they can walk unassisted. So it's more about not being intimidated by strength training, not categorizing that form of exercise as something for other people or for people who are athletes, and that also not having the mindset that it's all or none and that you have to go to a gym and use a bunch of weights and do something that you're unfamiliar with, that there are strategies you can do at home and that are really not that complicated to get stronger.
It's interesting that you say, and it is very clear, that it is never too late.
Yes.
Never too late to start.
That's part of the tagline of my business, never too early, never too late.
And you mentioned earlier someone talking to you about the fact that, honestly, they didn't really like doing much exercise, wanted to do the bare minimum. So what is the bare minimum, would you say? And clearly that's going to be different according to our age in terms of what our maximum capacity is at any one time. But for someone, let's say, midlife, around the age of 50, what is the minimum that you think they could do to actually see significant results? And we'll continue this conversation in just a moment.
Hey, quick question for you. Are you someone who wants to be fit, healthy, and happy? And what if I told you you could get your dream body by simply just listening to a podcast? I'm Josh.
And I'm KG, and we are the hosts of the Fit, Healthy, and Happy podcast.
Listen, we get it. Fitness isn't easy. Carbs, no carbs.
Just stop, okay? It doesn't have to be that complicated. And that's why we made this podcast. We get straight to the facts so you can become your best you.
So the way to check us out is click the link in the show notes or search Fit, Healthy, and Happy podcast on any of the major podcast platforms. We'll see you soon.
You know, I sometimes compare it to something that could take 2 minutes a day, when I call the bare minimum. I often ask people, you know, how long does it take to brush your teeth? Or first I start off with a joke and I say, you know, did you brush your teeth this morning before you left the house? And everybody laughs. Of course I did. It's like, well, how long did it take you? 1 or 2 minutes. So, well, did you ever tell yourself I don't have time? It's like, it's absurd. I would never say I don't have time. So what else is there that we could do that could take just 2 minutes that is just part of our routine, that we just do it because that's just what we do, and you would never have to say, I don't have time? So the example that I give is often picking 1 or 2 muscle groups. For a lot of people who are around the age of 50, which you gave that example, they might experience back pain. So I would say do a plank and a lower back stretch. And that could be less than 2 minutes a day. Now, if your abdominal muscles are on the weak side, you might not be able to do what's called a standard plank. But there are like 8 different levels of planks, starting with just doing a plank standing up and leaning into the wall. So we can find the right intensity. It's just a matter of the commitment of the habit and then finding the right level for you.
And when people think about strength training, it often equates to lifting weights, which can in itself be a little scary to some people that will think, I'm not a weightlifter. I don't need to lift dumbbells. And of course, it doesn't have to be that, does it?
No, it doesn't. And that's why I wrote my book, Boom. And so I have 2 different tracks in there, one for the never too early crowd and one for the never too late crowd. And it's exercises you can do with dumbbells, exercise tubing, and a big inflated ball at home. So it doesn't have to be weights. It doesn't have to be a gym. And it doesn't have to take long. It can just be a fairly minimal program.
And in terms of, I mean, clearly the inspiration to do this is obvious, but some people need just a bit of extra cajoling to achieve these small steps every day. And I often talk about really, really small steps. And it could be just as simple as just walking for 5 or 10 minutes a day. And I try personally to just add a little bit of extra walking into a day. So you go to the market, you go to the supermarket to buy your groceries, and the one crucial thing that kind of irritates me that people don't do is take the shopping cart back to the place where you're supposed to leave them. But if only you do that, it takes what, 2 minutes? And you might be walking a few hundred steps to do that. But if you do it every time you go...
Oh, absolutely. And that is one of the things that can be most helpful is when you allow yourself to accept, hey, this little bit counts. This helps. And I think the mindset is such a huge piece. And we have this all or none mindset in our head that if I'm not going to change into exercise clothes and drive somewhere and do something for an hour, I might as well not bother. Well, all of those tips, like park farther away from the grocery store, take the stairs instead of the elevator, all of those things count. They matter. And if you tell yourself, oh, it's 5 minutes, what good's that going to do? Well, the good it does is it gets the habit. And once the habit is there, the content can grow and evolve over time. So that's why I love to remind people that habit is can never be too small to be effective. And then also metabolically speaking, I also love to slide in another interesting statistic of where all those silly, some people think they're silly, recommendations came from to park farther away or things like that, is that when we're sitting, most of us are burning about 1 calorie per minute at rest. The minute that we stand, we're burning 1.5 calories per minute, 50% more. So when you think about, and when you're walking, it's double the calories of when you're sitting. So for 1 minute, okay, no big deal. For 10 minutes, not that big of a deal in calorie difference. But if you apply that strategy to yourself all day long, how much am I sitting versus standing? How much am I walking versus sitting? Then it really adds up. All of those minutes add up.
And it is, and I've mentioned several times, the fact that we need to think about this from an early age, probably from our 20s. And I think that is the big challenge, isn't it? That oftentimes people in their 50s and 60s, because they're feeling the effects of aging, will listen to this kind of advice, but not necessarily so for people who are much younger, who think, and I guess we've all been there, you think you're indestructible at that age. But it is a challenge, I think, and especially for people in your line of work, to try to get that message out to people who are ever younger.
Yes. And, you know, so right now I teach at a community college, and I specifically am doing that to fulfill what I think is part of my mission on the never too early end, to motivate those students who are in their 20s. And when I ask them, what type of 85-year-old do you want to be? I start off the semester with that on day one, and I get some hilarious answers where they think they want to be at 85. But they truly start thinking about it. And then when you also look at the family relationships, that's one of the other things I emphasize in my book, Boom, is that we should be thinking about our children and our parents and the intergenerational dynamics that we have, because we do improve our health in community and in family rel having less and less signals go to our brain. And so we're losing brain function. Our cognitive function is declining as we are, our hearing loss is accelerating. And so we really want to try to address that as early as possible.
Well, that's what's so fascinating about this. We're not just talking about hearing loss. We're talking about other physical changes in our body that comes as a result of, or at least in relation to, that loss of hearing. And you mentioned dementia clearly is a huge issue as we grow old. How close is the correlation between hearing loss and those changes that you mentioned about changes in the brain?
When you have even mild hearing loss, it doubles your risk of dementia. And moderate hearing loss puts your risk of dementia 3 times greater, and significant hearing loss puts you at 5 times the risk of dementia. So the correlation is extraordinary, and we really can't afford to ignore it.
And I suppose the question is then, what do we do about it? You've mentioned hearing aids. There are lots of devices that people can, whether they choose to or not, but there are devices that people can use. But for the broader effects that you're talking about in terms of dementia and our brain, as far as physical exercise is concerned, what can we do?
Well, actually, the first step is really to get your hearing tested early and often, because the first signs are when you are not only turning up the TV, but when you're asking people to repeat themselves. And what happens is that in the beginning, when you ask someone to repeat themselves, they'll repeat it. And if you still don't understand them the second time, what do? You smile and nod, right? And you pretend you heard them the second time. And when that keeps happening repeatedly, most people start tuning out or staying home, and they just start really becoming more socially isolated. Sometimes that rolls into depression. And in addition to the losing brain activity, then when you talk about our increasing our risk of depression also, then it's mental health issues from an emotional standpoint. So when you get your hearing tested, that is the number one thing you can do, because most people wait an average of 7 years from when they start experiencing hearing difficulty before they actually seek out treatment. And if you get tested and you find that you have some hearing loss, then you would want to develop that relationship with your audiologist to either get hearing aids or some other type of device that's going to supplement your hearing. And what tends to happen is that, unlike glasses, eyeglasses, people plunk eyeglasses on their face and they work. Well, hearing aids require ongoing adjustment. They require tweaking. Sometimes they're not comfortable in your ears. So they require adjustments and tweaking. And so you need to have an ongoing relationship with your audiologist to get to the point where not only do you have the hearing aids if you need them, but that you're wearing them, you know, and that you're using them effectively, and that that is what's going to protect your brain, that's going to allow you to stay involved in your social relationships and improve your quality of life.
One area that you mentioned that is fascinating to me is the potential for social isolation. And in terms of hearing loss, I know one thing that happens to a lot of people is that when you are in a social situation, and there's, which is good, which is great, you're with other people, but then there's a lot of noise in the background. And that's when a lot of people first notice that they actually can't hear a one-to-one conversation. As you said, they descend back into themselves and just play along as if they were part of that social situation, whereas they're actually not. Mm-hmm. And the loneliness and the maybe depression that can follow out of that can potentially be quite serious.
Absolutely. And what happens with amplifiers or hearing aids is that they amplify everything, not just what you're trying to hear. So sometimes hearing aids aren't enough by themselves. There are now more advanced hearing aids that have settings where you can, for instance, if you're in a setting where someone's using a microphone system, you can, you know, point your hearing aids directly to that microphone system, tie into that system and hear that preferentially over out background noise. But there are other strategies, like when you go to a restaurant, pick a corner table versus one that's right in the middle of the noise. When you want to have a private conversation with someone, say, hey, let's take this out to the hallway. There are different strategies that you want to employ to decrease background noise. Because until you experience the hearing loss and you notice that, you know what, gosh, I'm at a restaurant and not in COVID, I guess, but when we used to be at restaurants, if the wait staff was clattering silverware along the side of the room or calling to someone across the room, that would be just as disruptive to someone with hearing aids as it is to not hear anything. So noise levels can be a problem. Someone shouting at them or whispering at them or talking to them when they're coming up from behind without looking at them. You know, some people say, I need to put my glasses on to hear you better. And that's true, because when you're watching someone's lips move, you're going to be able to have more ways to comprehend the overall message that they're saying.
Is this something you noticed? You mentioned earlier that you worked with older populations. Have you noticed the discrepancies between people, those that have problems with their hearing and those that are okay in terms of their social involvement and perhaps just their general happiness?
Absolutely. But it has to do with the effort, because a couple of the people, one person named Peter, and then there is this other woman named Madeline, who I got to know very well, and they had significant hearing loss, but they worked tooth and nail to address their hearing loss and to maintain these social relationships. So they had fulfilling social lives. So it really has to do with, if you have no hearing loss at all, or if you have the hearing loss and you're addressing it, then you can have a high quality of life. So the difference is whether or not you're going to try to stay engaged. And the way Peter put it to me, he sent an email to me about a lot of his efforts, and he said, you know what? The alternative is oblivion. And I mean, he really nailed it as far as when you think about the what's at stake here. And the other thing, though, to make sure that we're addressing is that not only is hearing loss related to dementia or can increase our risk of dementia, sometimes hearing loss is mistaken as dementia. There have been cases where someone has been suspected to have dementia when they didn't, and it was just that they couldn't hear you, you know, and that once they actually hear you, then they can respond and their brain is functioning. So we really want to make sure that we're not ignoring this important aspect of our health.
I think this is probably a good example where we need to encourage people to embrace technology, because there is some great hearing technology around, and you've touched on some of it. There is a resistance by some people to that kind of aid, that they think, well, they're perhaps a little bit suspicious of it, that it won't actually help them. But if it does, and you've just beautifully explained, the alternative is oblivion. And that's a really stark message. And more generally, I think we're both very well aware of the problem of loneliness with older people. And this goes right to that point, doesn't it? That if you're isolated, you're lonely, and your general health deteriorates.
Absolutely. We're social creatures. We need to have that connection. And when we don't have a way to communicate and we don't have a way to receive messages, our brain cells die and our heart starts really closing down.
Kathy, you're a wealth of information, and I know you have a website that's full of everything that you do. For people who are listening to this and would really like to delve a little deeper into your work and perhaps get involved and benefit from some of your advice, where should they go? What can they do?
They can find me at kathyrichards.net, and Kathy is with a C, which is not as common as people think, but kathyrichards.net. I've got a lot of different resources there, free downloads and some videos, different things people can take advantage of.
And I'll put the details into the show notes for this episode. Just before we close, I often ask people this. In terms of all of the knowledge that you have in this sphere, as you live your own life, as you grow older as well, presumably with aspirations about your own old age, on a daily basis, what are those key things that you have in your mind as you pursue a long health span, as I like to put it, extending the number of healthy years that we have?
Well, as far as my own personal habits, you know, one of the things that I do that's easy, and when people are looking for easy tips, is I start off the day drinking an entire 16-ounce bottle of water. The first thing I do when I wake up in the morning. And, you know, we know that hydration is good for us, and sipping water all day long doesn't really work for me. I just need to down it, you know, and know that I can check that off, that I've already started my day prehydrated. And I always exercise first thing in the morning. And that's because I have a lot of kids. I have, you know, a lot of business obligations. And whenever I've told myself I'm going to do it later, it just doesn't happen. So I like to get my workout in first thing. And then also I really prioritize my sleep. And I know that that when our sleep is disruptive and we don't have enough sleep, then again, we are increasing inflammation hormones in our body. We're decreasing our immune system's able to respond. And we're really setting ourselves up for a disadvantage in a lot of different ways. So I really try to protect my sleep. And when we look at the different wellness trends that come year by year, it's my prediction that sleep is going to be one of our next big wellness trends as far as how much focus we put on it.
It's fascinating you should say that. I often talk about the pyramid of things that we should do to nurture our health and fitness. And I usually put sleep at the top because if sleep goes wrong, if you don't get enough sleep, it's going to affect your attitudes towards your diet. And I think you're more inclined not to have a sensible diet in that particular day. Mm-hmm. And you're perhaps more likely to skip your workout. Both of those things are crucially important, your exercise and what you eat. But if the sleep goes wrong, you don't get enough hours, that I think determines the rest of the day. And it's usually a negative spiral. So I think you're absolutely right. I think sleep in the future, the more we understand about our sleep, I think the better.
Mm-hmm. Stress hormones are much lower while we're sleeping. The stress hormone cortisol specifically. And we need that solid 8 hours of low cortisol levels to allow our brain cells to repair themselves, to rejuvenate, to consolidate memories. We really need that time. So it's so important, and it's so easily attacked. We are constantly staying up later or getting up earlier whenever we have something else to do. And it's something we really want to kind of question ourselves, how quickly we are to steal our sleep hours for other things.
Kathy, a great pleasure to talk to you. Thank you very much indeed.
Yes, my pleasure. Mine too. Thank you.
And we mentioned your book, Boom, 6 Steps to a Longer, Healthier Life. I will, as I say, put the details into the show notes for this episode, and you'll find them at Live Long and Master Aging website, llamapodcast.com. That's LLAMApodcast.com. If you're listening for the first time, you'll find at our website an index of all of our episodes, more than 130 now. If you enjoy what we do, you can rate and review us at Apple Podcast. The Llama Podcast is a HealthSpan Media production. You can follow us in social media at Llama Podcast and direct message me at Peter Bowes. It's always good to hear from you. Until the next time, take care and many thanks for listening. FlexBeam is a portable red light therapy device that's now being used by leading athletes, including the Norwegian tennis player Casper Ruud.
Whenever you put the FlexBeam on, you feel it starts to work right away. I need something that can help repair all the fibers that I have broken in the serves.
The infrared lights penetrate your skin and makes the muscle tissue recover faster. FlexBeam, I keep it with me all the time.
Recharge Health is offering Llama Podcast listeners an $80 discount on the purchase of a FlexBeam device. Go to the website recharge.health and use the code LLAMA at checkout. That's LLAMA. You'll also find the link in the show notes for this episode.